Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Shugel.
We're going to talk about housing this morning and the Keys for Christmas program. We're going to do that with Samantha Shukas with the George Washington Regional Commission, the Fredericksburg Regional Continuum of Care. Samantha, great to have you here again this morning. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
You came in about about a month ago, mm-hmm. talking about this program. And before we get into the Keys for Christmas and what's involved there, I guess one of the things that we all need to remember, and we got a kind of a jolt of it this week. If you had to scrape your car, it's getting colder, and that's a concern for the homeless.
Yeah. So back in March, we actually opened a bunch of hotel rooms to put people off of the street. Then it got nice and warm, and we kind of settled in, and we're really working on housing people. And now we have this new influx of people who have been on the street. So now we're trying to figure out how do we make sure that they're safe for the winter. MICA Ministries usually helps us with opening their cold weather shelter,
yeah.
which is usually a 2,200 square foot building and has on average 50 people a night in. So 2,200 square feet with 50 people on top of each other probably is not the best idea for COVID.
I never thought of that, that is a problem.
Yes. So we've had to rethink what cold weather shelter looks like this year. I think over the last two nights, we've tested what our new method would be. We were able to get 22 people in off of the street for the cold for the last two nights. And I think it's going pretty well, but we're really nervous about what the eviction moratorium might mean going into the new year and what the new influx of people who might be unsheltered is going to mean. So we're watching it closely, but I know for those who are seeing people who are outside and want to be able to help and tell them where to go, I think the best place to do if you see someone is to reach out to our homelessness helpline. It is 24 hours a day, and it's 540-358-5801, and they can always help direct them to services and get them connected where they need to be.
Wow, I had not even considered about COVID in the cold weather shelter, because you just kind of take it for granted,
right?
That it gets cold, MICA opens the shelter, and that's where people go for the next couple of months while it's so cold. And yeah, this changes everything. This is again one of those situations where you just have to rethink everything in life right now, and this is a great example of it.
Yeah, and I also think that we take for granted the amount of effort and supplies that it takes to even run our cold weather shelter. What we're talking about is searching the street for people who are sitting there and trying to convince them to come indoors.
Yeah.
We also now have a need for masks and other sanitary supplies in order to make sure they have what they need and to even provide them with the transportation safely to the hotel. And then what's really great is we have always matched our services of shelter and housing with case management. So our case managers are working around the clock with trying to make sure that people who we put into hotels or in shelter stay there, especially when it's cold.
Yeah.
But are also working towards housing as they're moving along and buying their time.
So do you have to convince some people to come? Or will they just sit there and just say, I'm good?
They will. So actually in March, when we did a big sweep and got every single person off of the street, 8 were left who absolutely refused hotel. What was good about that point is we knew we were going into a warm season and it was a little bit safer. It's even less safe now, so it takes a little more convincing. Sometimes bribing with food and other things to try to get them to come inside.
Yeah.
Our street outreach team is amazing at what they do in trying to convince people and really build that rapport so that once you're inside, you know you'll see a safe face. You're not stuck there. You can still go out during the day and do what you need to do, but really concerned about your safety during the night.
So are these volunteers, or who do you have your street team?
Yeah, so a lot of them are employed by MICA Ministries.
Okay.
Their day center staff will go out after hours. They have someone from their respite shelter who actually goes out. They also partner with the Rappahannock Area Community Services Board for a PATH outreach person. That person's particularly about getting people who are unsheltered connected with mental health supports, but he is a wonderful resource for really connecting with people who are on the street and trying to get them convinced as well. So we do both of those. So it's a partnership. It's a mismatch of who's awake at 3 o'clock in the morning to try to deal with the call.
Right.
We do get some interaction with the police department, and we partner really closely with them to try to make sure that we can get them connected to the resources that they need so that that person can kind of get off of their radar and they can move on to what they need to be doing as police officer, but also that that person's safe.
Is it? I don't know if it's just me or if there are more people around, but it seems to me over the last few weeks, whenever I'm downtown, I've seen people, and it just seems as though there might be more. I'm seeing more homeless people, it seems, around in the downtown, and have wondered if that is the case.
Yeah. So we, like I mentioned, got everyone off the street in March. We were settling in. We have seen an uptick in the people who are unsheltered in the last 2 months. I think most of that is due to the slowness of our emergency shelter process right now. We are limited beds, again, because of the COVID constrictions.
Yeah.
You have to remember, we had an 80-bed shelter. There in Brisbane was 80 beds. And having that many people even on top of each other in the space that they have may not be conducive. We really practice on social distancing and requirements around that. And so it has limited the number of beds that we have in our community. We've tried to kind of balance that out with the additional hotel beds, though that funding is going away very quickly. I think we estimate right now we'll probably make it to the beginning of the summer. So it will get us through the winter. But after that, we're not 100% sure what we're going to be able to do. But I'm also hoping that COVID is over by then.
You hope so. I think we all, with the vaccine and all, hope things change, because that would give you some more beds and some more space to be able to do things. But it's so interesting that it really has affected everything, and just things that we just take. Because when it got cold, and I knew there would be we've gotten to assume that a lot of things happen, and there's no assuming anymore. And especially when you're dealing with the homeless, I mean, these are all people.
Yeah.
You're dealing with people and in their lives.
Yeah.
So
I think our partners have done a wonderful job with rolling with it.
Yeah.
I think myself and the other leadership who work with me are very much planners, and they like to be on top of it and think 6 months to a year ahead of time. And COVID has really thrown us off of that.
Yeah. Well, in a way, it's good that you've been here and been able to do this for a while. When Lisa Crittenden was in about a week ago talking about things at Lois Ann's Hope House, and we talked about how things had changed when the continuum of care and you came on board. So it's fortunate that you've been able to be here and you know, you're not just somebody new stepping into this.
Yes. I think, you know, when we started the new year, we were actually working on, we, the continuum of care, were working on a strategic plan about how we would end homelessness in the next 5 years. Very quickly, we were tasked with doing everything on that strategic plan in a very short period of time in order to tackle COVID. I think we're not unique in this, really highlighted all the gaps and all the areas in all of our community services, homelessness being one of them, affordable housing being one, mental health, healthcare, all of transportation being a huge one, economics. So I think we're not unique in that. It's really challenged us to rethink the way that we do work and how quickly things happen, because like most government work, it goes very slow.
Yeah.
And now it really can't.
Yeah, yeah. Samantha Shook is here with the George Washington Regional Commission, the Continuum of Care. We will continue. We're going to talk about the Keys for Christmas program when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA. We are back. We are Samantha Shook is here with the George Washington Regional Commission and the Fredericksburg Regional Continuum of Care. Before we get into Keys for Christmas, Samantha, we should talk about the Continuum of Care itself and what that is, because for a lot of people that may be a new term.
Yeah, I think most people in the community are a little shocked when I say it. They think healthcare, they think all sorts of things
right
when I say continuum of care. So continuum of care is actually a HUD term, so the federal department that oversees a lot of housing and homelessness. It is basically the network of organizations that work together to prevent end homelessness for a given region. So for our region, we're talking about the entire planning district, Spotsylvania, Stafford, King George, Carolina, and the city. And then we actually have over 60 members in the continuum of care. So it's people like MICA and Empower House and Hope House and the Thurman Brisman Center who actually provide those direct services. But it's also lots of organizations that are on the peripheral of that who touch the lives of people who are homeless but may not necessarily provide the direct services. So we're talking places like the Moss Free Clinic for healthcare, the SPCA for homeless animals, which most people don't think about, or people who have animals and that stops them from going into emergency shelter. We also have the food bank for food insecurity and things like that. So we have a ton of members who are really involved with trying to figure out how do we how do we move people from homelessness to housing, how do we keep them there and support them in our community once they're there?
How did you get involved in this?
So continuum of care work really just fell into my lap. When I was in my master's program at VCU, I actually worked with the Richmond Continuum of Care, which is a much larger and more urban area. We're talking a lot more homeless than we see here. I did a lot of work for them for about 2 years. A lot of my focus was actually on how do I get people who experience homelessness in the room to talk about how we plan homeless services. A lot of the planning work that we do are done by organizations who mean well, who think they do a great job, but most of them have not experienced homelessness themselves. And so how do we get people who are actually on the street and in our shelters a part of saying, how does this end for our community and what should that look like?
Wow. I remember when the continuum of care came into this community, and it was a big change when everybody sort of all sort of came together, and it was a new term, and it was really a new concept.
Yeah, I think prior to the continuum of care, you had a lot of organizations who were doing their own thing. They might have shared clients, and they talked to each other on a regular basis. But the continuum of care really kind of forced and encouraged stronger collaboration to really make planning on a larger level happen and happen quickly. So now we meet, we have committees and working groups that meet on a monthly basis who are tasked with different parts of the homeless world. We have things anywhere from our discharge planning group that really looks at people who cycle between hospital and jail and our homeless services and how do we end that cycle, to how are our homeless services running and how do people access those and how do we do our funding. We also have a group that looks at all of our applications and figures out who we should support and how much and what do we do with the limited funds that we have for homeless services for our community. So we do a whole range of things and are involved in a lot of conversations on a higher level across the community to try to figure out how do we tackle homelessness from every angle.
Well, and I remember, and then we were just talking about COVID, and because mm-hmm. I can remember in the early days of COVID talking with Megan Cotter of MICA and just how it was, and you've kind of described it too, of just how you just all of a sudden have to try to figure out how to do everything all over again.
Yeah, when COVID hit, we actually moved from monthly meetings with our providers to weekly meetings and even daily phone calls between me and individual providers.
Wow.
We're trying to figure out how do we tackle this? How do we make sure that people who are experiencing homelessness are safe? What do we do about the influx of calls now that people are panicked about losing their job and on the verge of losing their housing? And how
yeah.
do we support the community in that? And then we did get a huge influx of funding from the CARES Act. So we had a lot of work to do very quickly to distribute those funds to the providers that needed them the most. And it was never enough, never is enough funding.
Yeah.
But how do we strategically do that to really focus on what our strategies were to kind of make it through COVID and everyone to be safe?
Samantha Shuk is here with the George Washington Regional Commission, the Fredericksburg Regional Continuum of Care. And you talked a few minutes ago when we were talking about just concern about funding through next summer. I mean, that's always the big thing. You're so dependent. The localities do what they can, but you are really, I guess, dependent a lot of times on federal funds and in what the federal government what they say they'll all pay for.
Yeah, so the other large part of the continuum of care duties is actually writing collaborative applications on behalf of the community. HUD at its federal level and the state used to take individual applications from each provider to say, what can I fund you for?
Mm-hmm.
They no longer want to know what each individual provider is doing. Hmm. They want to know what we are doing as a community collaboratively and how they can fund the community for those efforts. So my job is really about writing large applications on behalf of our providers to say our community's effort is this, and this is how our partners really fit into that larger picture. We have a majority of our funding usually comes from the state, which is like pass-through funding from the federal government, a little bit from federal, and then a lot of it is local funds and even fundraising that our providers are getting directly that I help support and messaging and things like that,
yeah.
That I don't really have a huge hand in. I think with COVID, we have seen a huge drop for our providers in the amount of fundraising. A lot of them had to cancel fundraising events, which made it really hard for them to have their regular revenues for the year to support their programming. So we've been trying to figure out how do we do that while also doing more because the demand is more with COVID.
Boy, it was complicated before, but it is complicated now. And like we said, the other component, because we talk about this kind of just in general terms, you really are dealing with the people on the street, and you've got all the way down to the volunteer. You know, these are people,
yes.
And that's ultimately what you're dealing with.
Yeah, I try to take the stance of how can I be of assistance to deal with the bureaucracy and the funding,
yeah.
And all of those things so that our wonderful partners can really focus on the people. So they are the ones with the skills. They're the ones that have the boots on the ground and are working way over time to make it happen during especially the COVID season. So anything that I can do to kind of alleviate some of that, whether that's conversations with localities to help them understand why funding is needed and what the issues are, or even putting together applications that we usually don't get so I can distribute those funds across the community, that's where I kind of fit in.
Well, and I guess the other thing is it's always easy to criticize government and local government if you're close to it. But boy, local governments have stepped up locally and have done, I know, what they have to do and have, I'm sure, made your job a lot easier in a lot of ways.
They have. They have been very interested in the homeless conversation throughout this, I think mostly due to the increased conversations around eviction moratoriums and what that's going to look like. I've done a number of presentations even in the last couple of weeks that are around this topic specifically. They support our providers on an annual basis, and then during COVID, some of them got CARES money, and so they were able to even put more money towards our providers to make sure that they had what they need during the time. I think they're still trying to make those decisions and figure out what's the best for our communities and for our providers to make sure people are safe. But they have. They've really been a part of that conversation and wanting to figure out how do we come out of COVID maybe even better than what we were before.
Wow. And I know you talk to people like in school districts and in others, and people are starting to take that approach that we can come out of this stronger and figure some things out that we've never had to figure out before.
Yes, I think for our community, we have seen an influx for homeless services of $2.5 million come into our community.
Hmm.
Just towards homeless services. That's went
wow.
to things for emergency shelter, that went to some prevention services, that went to housing. And so that's additional funding to our annual budget. So we really have a unique opportunity right now to really see that funding go to good use and really make a dent in our housing. And I think that's what Keys for Christmas kind of is working towards and helping us get there.
We're going to really jump into that in a second, but just kind of overall, what is Keys for Christmas all about?
Yeah, so Keys for Christmas is a landlord incentive program. When we finally got some funds for housing out of the CARES money, we wanted to figure out how we move everyone that we have now have in our hotels we opened for COVID and our emergency shelter into housing. And so we asked the state for funding to be able to do that. We got a large portion of it. So we now have funding, and we are targeting to move 95 households into housing in 90 days. So Keys for Christmas is our incentive program to be able to do that. Any landlord who signs a lease with us between now and Christmas Eve gets an extra 1 month of rent as a signing bonus. So they would get their security deposit, their first month's rent, and the signing bonus at the front by housing our folks.
Wow, that's a great incentive. To do that. So how's it been going so far?
It's been going very well. Josie Ramos, our community housing locator who was here with me last time, has been running trying to find units. So we have housed so far 46 households out of the 95.
Okay, well, you're making progress.
We are making progress. So she, I think, is even doing somewhere around 5 more lease signings this week. She is rolling with making people a home for the holidays.
Yeah. Yep. Wow, that is exciting. If there is a landlord out there that's interested in getting involved with Keys for Christmas, are you one of the people they contact, or Josie or somebody?
Yeah, so they can contact Josie. All of the information and Josie's contact information is on the Stable Homes Partnership website. It's stablehomespartnership.org. That term is for that partnership that Josie has with our landlords. So what's really great about Josie's program is she's able to meet with landlords, tell them about the program, figure out what their qualifications are. You still have complete say over who rents your units. Josie just has the pool of tenants to give you so that you don't have to advertise your units or really struggle with finding people to come forward. On top of the great signing bonus.
Yeah.
And then the partnership also includes ongoing case management for those folks after they move in. So if there's ever an issue for the landlord, rather than jumping right to eviction or the costly kinds of mitigation that comes along with that, they have someone to reach out to and kind of mitigate that issue with the tenant rather than having to go down the legal process for.
StableHomesPartnership.org
Yes. Is
the website. That's great that is all there. We're going to continue to talk about this. Samantha Shook is here with us with the George Washington Regional Commission, the Fredericksburg Regional Continuum of Care. We're going to take a quick break and return on News Talk 1230 WFVA. We are talking this morning with Samantha Shukas. She is the George Washington Regional Commission, the Fredericksburg Regional Continuum of Care. We're talking about the homeless and the Keys for Christmas program. So what, 44, you said? You got 44?
46.
Oh, 46. Oh, that's even better. 40, 46 toward the goal of 95. And yet, housing around here is so difficult to find right now. That really is, because you look at that. And I remember at first, when I first was introduced to this late summer, early fall, and I thought, oh, well, that's doable. But then as you came in and talked about it, you and Josie, a month or 6 weeks ago, talked about this. And it is hard to find housing right now, anywhere.
Very hard. So I think prior to COVID, a lot of our localities were experiencing low vacancy rates. I think that's most communities in our country. I think affordable housing has been in the top of conversations for a while now on a federal level, on state levels, on local levels of how do we combat this issue. What makes it even harder, I think, is most times when you talk about affordable housing, it's not people who experience homelessness that you're actually talking about making housing affordable for. What we're usually talking about is our workforce. So how do we keep our teachers and our police officers and our firefighters in the localities in which they work? Many of them commute because of the housing costs and things
right. Like
that. Right,
yeah.
What we're really targeting is housing who's affordable for the lowest of low incomes.
Yeah.
Or people who have no income at all. So we service both. Those who have a little bit, maybe they're on disability or receive a little bit from a side job or something like that. But we also have a lot of people who are homeless and have no income when they start out with us. So how do you house folks with that? Or at even an affordable rate where they'd be able to continue it on by themselves? That mix, I think, with the eviction moratorium. Usually evictions have been pretty steady in our community, and we, when they came out with that eviction list about who had the highest evictions in the country, 5 of the top 10 were in Virginia.
Yikes.
So we had quite a high number of evictions in our state. And I think there's been a lot of work to figure out how do we make it more tenant friendly and not eviction heavy. A lot of changes to the landlord-tenant law came out 2 years ago to kind of make it easier to have more chances to pay your rent, to get out of your eviction and things like that. But the eviction moratorium really stopped evictions altogether, which stopped the turnover of units. So you have a low vacancy rate and then you have no turnover of the rate,
right,
the units that you usually have. But a lot of conversation that we've been having lately is how dependent on evictions do we need to be to end homelessness?
Right. There's right. As you were discussing that, there's the whole, you talk about, you know, a difficult situation and trying to figure it out.
Yeah. So I think we've been making it work for a number of years because that's just been our environment. But the eviction moratorium really challenged us to think we should probably think outside the box of, rather than thinking that we need to continue to rely on evictions to house homeless people, which then you may have a new pot of homeless people who just got evicted.
Right. Yeah.
So we've been looking. I think Keys for Christmas has really helped with bringing some new units on board that aren't usually available to us. I think there has been some resistance in the past about joining our program because what it might mean and perceptions around subsidized housing or things like that. But we have also been working as a region to figure out what's the long-term option here to bring more housing stock on board. So our partners have been having conversations with localities about building a regional development to bring affordable housing to the region.
I was going to ask you how is that is interesting.
Yeah. So again, Megan Cotter with the MICA Ministries has been working with the region and some other regional partners like the Community Services Board to really think what that might look like. She's always had a vision for a community, a village that people would have affordable housing, supported housing with case management, and then also have some community supports that would keep them tied to that community and really feel supported and connected and have purpose. So she's trying to figure out what that might look like. It's changed a little bit. I think at first she thought about tiny home villages on rural developed land.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're starting to think that COVID has opened an opportunity for us about what would it take to buy a motel? you have a lot of motels that are shutting down, or
yeah,
even office spaces that will no longer be used as people have decided that they no longer need to actually have an office space to work and people can work from home. So you have a lot of buildings that will probably soon be sitting,
right,
or be vacant. And so is there a way that we could be really challenged as a community and as a region to rethink how we use those spaces, to make them into living spaces that could be more affordable for people?
Interesting. Just the whole repurposing of that. You look at some of these areas where you've got a lot of empty space and you would be able to use that.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest challenges for our area would probably be zoning.
Right. That was the next question. Yeah.
You have different zoning laws in each of our localities,
yeah,
so depending on where you would go. I think you also have different access to services. I think transportation is always a consideration as we feel challenged with public transportation. We are also at our office been looking at how do we bring higher paying jobs to our area. So not only is it public transportation to get to your basic needs like your doctor's appointments and your grocery store, but how do I get to my jobs when my job isn't in the locality either?
Yeah.
So that takes a little bit more of a longer range transportation option. Our executive director at GWRC has actually been doing what we call good jobs here to try to think about what are some options or how can we bring in some employment options for our locality, kind of keep people here with us.
Samantha Shook is here with GWRC. Interesting stuff. Now, is going back to the Keys for Christmas program, as you described that, one of the things that I remember we talked about the last time that you provide the landlords is you're not just giving them people, you're also providing them help. And I think that's another component of this. You're not just getting you've got somebody that you can communicate with and work with.
Yeah. So the Keys for Christmas partnership is really between Micah Ministries, Lois Ann's Hope House, Thurman Brisbane Center, and Empower House. So we are housing folks from all of those agencies. Three of those agencies support our rapid rehousing program, which is that subsidy and case management that comes along with that subsidy to move people in. So Josie, our community housing locator, helps with actually finding the units and supporting the landlords to actually get their first tenant in. Once people are in, they meet at least monthly, it's usually more, with the person who would be seeing them ongoing until they exit the program. That case manager would work on things like increasing their income so they can take over their housing expenses on their own. We do provide rental payments and things like that to get them in and get them focused on their other issues rather than having to think about where they're going to sleep for the night. So we support them a little bit financially, but usually people trickle off of that very quickly. We, on average, I think, have people on financial assistance with us for about 6 months, and the case management continues during that and even further on. So they meet at least monthly, and they're working on anything that might have to do with their housing stability, whether that's employment, mental health, substance abuse, finding support in the community, finding purpose, childcare, all sorts of things. So we really put someone into housing without any precondition, without any kind of requirements, and then wrap services around them. We've been doing really well at that. Our numbers right now, people who go into our housing programs, once they exit, so once they actually end their case management and their financial assistance, do not return to us for over 2 years.
Oh, wow.
So 82% of people who move into housing do not come back within 2 years.
What that to be able to provide that component, this is it's more than just getting the 95 or what, you know, any number. It's more than just getting a family, a person into housing. It's being help. It's getting them out of just that whole system.
Yeah, I think the hard part is we really are focused on the immediate crisis of their housing. So we want to end their homelessness, and we want to end it quickly. That's always our biggest thing. So that's why we give them that, what we use the term housing first. Mm-hmm. Here's your house. You don't have to worry. Now we can focus on the other things. We then try to get them connected in the community, because when we step away, we want them to feel supported and have what they need on their own. Now, what the tricky part is it may not necessarily at the end of our time with them end the greater society issue of poverty.
Yeah.
People and the demographics of people who live in poverty do not look that different from people who are homeless. The difference usually is the support in which people who live in poverty and people who experience homelessness. So you have people who are just as low income. You have people who have just as many children, have just as many issues. But if I were to become homeless or lose my housing, I would have a family member to go to or someone else to support me. And a lot of our people who experience homelessness lose those supports either by burning bridges with people or jumping from place to place until they finally have nowhere else to go. So we really try to build those supports up for folks once we put them in housing and how we can get them onto their feet and feel supported again. So when we walk away, they are able to continue their lives and continue to work towards their own goals.
Boy, Samantha, one of the things I think that you've brought out this morning in a great way, I mean, there's so many people involved in this process. There really is. This isn't just a one person kind of thing. There are so many agencies and so many groups and just so many professionals involved in this whole topic.
Yeah, I'd say it's a huge circus.
Yeah.
Everyone's got their own tricks and trades that they're doing as part of the show. And they really have the client at the center with trying to receive and kind of benefit from a lot of that. So what's really great is all of our clients play a very active role in what that looks like. None of our services are required. None of our services are forced on anyone. They're all voluntary, like most services usually are in the human service field. So they're really their ringmaster and have all of these people around them trying to support them. What it means is a lot of collaboration across our agencies. You have a client who could be touching six different agencies and six different case managers, each doing their own thing.
Wow.
But how do you make them collaborate together and really think through how you do that in an effort that's effective and efficient for everyone? So we use the COC meetings for a lot of that. We have case conferencing around, okay, here's client A. They have this issue and this issue and this issue. Who do we need at the table and who do we connect them with so that when they go into housing that they're ready and supported?
I know every year, and it's amazing to me that this whole is difficult as this whole year has been. When you come back every January, there's a specific day where you count the homeless in the area, and I can't believe we're rolling around to that day again. But that's coming up again.
Yeah. So every January, in the last 10 days of January, every community is required to do what we call a point in time count. So we actually rely on community volunteers to go out and actually survey people who are experiencing homelessness. Usually what that looks like is we have early morning teams. So we have people actually traipsing in the woods looking for encampments and trying to talk to people. We also usually try to tag our community breakfasts and our community dinners, our day center at MICA, and then all of our shelters are counting and surveying their people too. And it really is to give us a snapshot of who experiences homelessness on that given day each year. Over time, we're able to look at trends, how it's changed, and how we've been able to progress. I think with COVID, we're going to be doing it a little bit differently this year because we want to make sure that people are safe who want to volunteer and still have an interaction. And a lot of our services remain closed. So our breakfasts and our food programs aren't happening. Our libraries, which is a very common hangout for people who experience homelessness because of the warmth during the winter, are still not open. And so we have even a limited number of service locations that we would be looking at. But we're still looking for volunteers. We know that the majority of people who usually experience unsheltered are probably in our hotels and our other emergency shelters right now, but there are still a few. It's also hard to gauge right now what it would look like at the end of January of who is out there. So we are starting recruitment this week for volunteers. If you're willing to help us with surveying or even collecting incentives for us to give out. We usually give out some bus tickets for people who take the survey for us. We were also thinking about getting masks and hand sanitizer and things like that so they could have those. So if you want to get involved with the point in time count in any way, you can volunteer with us. We have information on the COC website, which is FredericksburgCoc.org.
Okay, Fredericksburg COC, Continuum of Care. Yeah. .org is Fredericksburg spelled out? Fredericksburg, yes. COC, FredericksburgCoc.org, and I have seen and talked to people who have done this, and they talk about just what an eye-opening experience it is to actually see how people live, and it's and many of them that talk about just how tough it is to realize that.
Yeah, what I've heard is mixed results. I think people don't realize where encampments have been in the past and how close they really are to us. I think I've also gotten how beautiful some of them are.
Really?
People are really resourceful when they try to make a home, and that's their home for a really long time. We've had anywhere from homemade paths that are lit with pebbles and like little lights that they found laying around. Someone who made their own like chimney and had a little fire in their pits. But I think it's nice to be able to not only see it, but also to let people who experience homeless know that there's people who are out there looking out for them, not just to count them on a given night, but we also give out information on resource sheets and things like that to say, you know, there are options for you if you did want to come inside. And sometimes, like we talked about before, it takes a little bit of convincing.
Yeah.
And to know that there's a friendly face who will be there on whatever timetable that they are once they're ready.
So, and again, Fredericksburg, COC.org, if someone wants to get involved in your I'm assuming you need quite a few volunteers to do this.
Yeah, so usually, I think last year we had about 40 volunteers.
Okay.
And then I think we'll probably have a little bit less this year just because we want to make sure that people are safe. We will be requiring a screening just like you would at the doctor's office for symptoms and things like that, on a temperature check prior to actually going out to talk to people.
Sure.
But I will say I would caution anyone. I think a lot of our volunteers are usually older adults who like to be out and get those. But think about your high-risk status and
right
thinking
now
about whether or not you would like to actually participate. Even if it's, like I said, even if it's not doing the surveys, we have other things that we would be happy to kind of tag you in for so you can be involved with the point in time count process, whether that's entering surveys for us into them once we get them filled out, or even like getting the donations for us to be able to have some incentives to give people who are participating. I think the biggest thing is we want to be able to provide them with something for their time and their information, other than you'll be a number in a report. So that's why we really talk
right
about the bus tickets and really trying to give something for their time with us. So yeah, I think there's lots of ways to get involved. All the information will be on our website at the FredericksburgCoc.org. And I don't think I mentioned the date, but right now we are scheduled for January 28th.
Okay, January 28th. Before we get out of here, a couple of things. We started off and you talked about how, you know, the cold weather shelter as we have known and is going to be different this year. Is that something that's funded through donations, and that if people want to get involved that way with that, or how is that going to work?
So I believe the way that the cold weather shelter is usually funded is some locality funds and a lot of private donations.
Okay.
Micah Ministries is still doing the cold weather shelter in its form this year.
Yeah, so check Micah.
Yes. Also, I think we are also always in need of cleaning supplies and masks and basic things that we're all trying to find at the grocery store these days. So if there is ever a want to donate those things, I am happy to take those inquiries so that we can make sure that they get distributed to all of our partners if you can't pick the one that you want to donate to.
Okay.
So all my contact information is shukas@gwregion.org. And we also have a contact form on the same website, FredericksburgCoc.org. If you ever have an inquiry about wanting to do something but not knowing how to help, we can help figure out how to point you in the direction from a COC level.
And you're right. I think that's – I'm glad you gave that. And really that FredericksburgCoC.org would be a good place to go. Like you say, if you don't know who to go to and you're a good contact person that can – direct it where it needs to go.
Yeah, we did a big drive at the beginning of COVID on behalf of the partners for things like toilet paper and paper towels and cleaning supplies and aspirin and masks. So we were able to collect that and really distribute among all of our partners. I think all of our partners do a really great job at putting themselves out there and messaging and telling people what they need. But sometimes you feel torn about who you should give to or what population and things
right
like that. So I think you're right. I think the COC is a great place, a neutral party to really make sure that as dire needs come up for the providers, we can get those filled on a more equitable basis.
FredericksburgCoc.org for all that information. And again, the Keys for Christmas program, 95 households, and you're getting there. You're going to be over 50 before you know it.
Yes.
And you're really at this point looking for, I mean, the program, you're looking for landlords that they can, and this is more than just. You provide a lot to landlords.
Yes. So we're still looking for units. It can be a house with multiple bedrooms, and we could put multiple households in together. We do double up, especially with the high rental costs. So mm-hmm. we do put singles together who would be roommates and might be a good fit to live together. And again, our case managers help with mitigating even roommate issues.
Yeah.
So it can be a house with multiple rooms. It can be a bedroom that we could sign a lease for. It could be a basement apartment. It could be anything, as long as it can pass our basic inspection that Josier Community Housing Locator helps us with. And there's a lease, then we are able to kind of move people in. So right now we're at 46. We're trying to get to 95. You still have lots of time before Christmas Eve to sign the leases with us. So if you're interested, again, you want to go to stablehomespartnership.org, or you can call Josie at 540-760-3310, and she'll be happy to walk you through any questions that you might have. And think through if this is the right program for you to be a part of.
Stablehomespartnership.org or 760-3310 to get a hold of Josie Ramos. But there's just a lot. Great having you here, Samantha, just because there is so much going on. And there are so many opportunities. And there are so many times that the people say, I would like to help. I would like to help, but I don't know how. And there are, like you said, there are numerous organizations or the FredericksburgCoc.org to go to find out, because it just sounds like there are all kinds of ways, in different ways. Even if it's just that you can go out and buy toilet paper and wipes and paper towels.
Yes.
If that's what you want, if that's what you feel like you want to do, all of that is needed right now.
Yeah, and I think you definitely have groups come out during the holidays who want to do something good and
yeah.
want to figure out how to do that and make an effective use of their skills for what the community actually needs. And so let us help you figure out how to direct that energy. We love enthusiastic people, but I think we also want to make sure that you are aware and know kind of what we're looking for and what would actually be the biggest help, so that your energy can really be put towards something that the partners can really use.
And there really are so many things. If you really are looking for a way to get involved, you can find it. And again, go to FredericksburgCoc.org. has all kinds of great information. And now I hope next month when we get together that that number is closer to 95.
Yes.
Because when you all were in last month. So we're moving forward, and it's great for the people and for landlords that are looking for something stable. At the present time, this is a great opportunity. Are other localities doing something similar? I mean, you're using CARES Act money, and that was I'm sure others are anybody doing something like this?
So I don't know that they're doing it exactly the same way. I think the state has allowed for landlord incentives through our funding, which they haven't allowed for before, mostly to know that we can get more people in when we have a little push behind it. But I think there's other localities throughout the state who are being creative. Keys for Christmas is kind of just ours.
FredericksburgCoc.org. Samantha Shukas is with George Washington Regional Commission, the Fredericksburg Regional Continuum of Care. Samantha, thank you so much. We'll see you soon. Thanks.
Yes,
we'll talk
thank
again
you.
Next month. And happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
That's it for Town Talk. We'll see you on Monday.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.